You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the Outkick Network, this is Outkick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
Glad you're with us as the second hour is underway. Outkick 360 rolls on from 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. We have a big discussion coming up on the Saints and the Buccaneers as our NFL team-by-team preview continues with the NFC South. We have a note on the Patriots' offense, what to watch for this coming weekend, and a note from their joint practice with the Panthers where more fights are breaking out and why. And our SEC conversation today, we head down to Baton Rouge, LSU, and an over-under that I find very intriguing. Dave Hookstead from Outkick joins us in about an hour and a half. Guys, there's plenty of headlines and takes from the NFL joint practices. No major offensive fireworks for the 49ers today against the Vikings. They have a joint practice taking place just outside of Minnesota at the Vikings practice facility. But Trey Lance has been continuing the good play with Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, and Kittle. All of those guys, all the stars are on the field for the 49ers, and apparently Trey Lance continues to have very consistent play. Outside of that, Kirk Cousins returned. He had COVID. He missed the preseason game. He's back for the Vikings. Justin Jefferson, there was a tweet from one of the one of the media members covering the Vikings saying Justin Jefferson looks great in that. And J.C. Horn is returning to form prior to his injury that kept him out of a good portion of the offseason and last year for the Panthers. He's back for Carolina off PUP.
How about Drew Locke gets COVID? He was slated to get his start at quarterback for the Seahawks and now yields that to Geno Smith, probably screwing up whatever chance he had to wrest that job from the favorite in Seattle. Not well-timed for him.
Packers defense and the Saints defense both had great days today in their joint practice work. And Olave, the rookie receiver, should point him out. He's playing well for New Orleans in this work. It was Dobbs. I'm trying to remember his name. Romeo Dobbs, for the wide receiver for the Packers. He came up with two big grabs in the joint work against the Saints defense. This is a day after Aaron Rodgers publicly called out the young receivers, saying they need to be more consistent. They're dropping too many passes. So Rodgers went straight to the media availability and said, "Step up your game." And Dobbs has done that at least one day in.
It's a great story right now.
Cowboys and Chargers practicing right now. If anything develops, we'll let you know. So the college football playoff. We've had the discussion. Pretty much know three of the teams that will be in the college football playoff, should be in the college football playoff: Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. In any order you want to frame that discussion, I think 90% of college football fans would agree with that. The others would be the fan bases of the rivals that those three schools would be facing on an annual basis. The preseason top 25 we heavily discussed on Monday from the AP. Every college football playoff champion has come from the preseason top six since we've seen the college football playoff in its current form. So the top six right now: Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Clemson, Notre Dame, Texas A&M. Outside of the top six, guys, and really, I agree, it's a top three. Outside of the top six, who could break the trend this year as you look at the teams ranked below the six that we project to be playing for the actual crown?
I just took it this way. Like, I looked at a team I think everybody likes outside of the top six, which happens to be seventh, Utah. And I thought, like, well, what would it take for them to get in for starters? You know, maybe they could lose one, right? A one-loss Utah team, depending on what goes on ahead of them there. Be tough to get into the top four, though, because the best teams on their schedule are Florida, USC, who's 14 now, and Oregon, 11. So I think even a one-loss Utah is dependent on what goes on with those top four, top six ahead of them at the beginning. And could they get in there and win it? I mean, basically, for a team like Utah, and a team like Utah is in the Pac-12 now, so it's not a small-time team, you have to get in and get hot and be on a run. It's almost like a March Madness feel to it in terms of the upset level. But you're not a Cinderella in terms of where you come from.
Well, I think that they're definitely a Cinderella in that that program based on the powerhouses
we're
talking about. But you
get what I'm saying. They're not coming from the MAC or something.
I'm not convinced they're going to go to Florida and win to start the season. I think if they do that, they've got a great chance. Because keep in mind, there is a Pac-12 championship that's played at Allegiant Field, we were just talking about, in Vegas, where they could have two wins over USC, let's say. You know, if they beat them out of the South in the championship game, even with a loss, I think it would give them a chance.
But where's USC ranked at that point? You know what
I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, I think you – look, I'm looking at teams that could contend. I would put USC on the list. So I think both Utah and USC I would put in a top four or five outside the top six that could be a playoff team given schedule, given roster. I'm going to go with one. Everyone's talking about the guy who left Oklahoma. And that is Lincoln Riley. Everyone's talking about Caleb Williams, another guy who left Oklahoma to go to Hollywood and play at USC. And USC's this sexy, hot team with those two. I'm going to go with a guy who came to Oklahoma and then who stayed behind. And another guy who came to Oklahoma from somewhere else. The Oklahoma Sooners. That's the answer for me. They're ninth right now preseason. You look up and down their schedule, very, very winnable. Outside of a game at home against Texas at TCU, they go to Nebraska, which will be challenging. It was a year ago in Norman. They have Baylor at home, who's right behind them at number 10 in the preseason. And they get Oklahoma State at home, both coming to Norman, who's 12th right now. I think that's going to be your Big 12 representative. Not that that surprises anyone. Oklahoma is no one's Cinderella, based on their history getting the college football playoff and being a contender. But give me Dylan Gabriel, who threw for over 3,500 yards as a freshman and sophomore for Josh Heupel at UCF, gets hurt his junior year, now transfers in. He's going to be the starter. Guys, he may be the better quarterback between Caleb Williams and him. Oklahoma may get the better deal out of this in the end, this season, with Dylan Gabriel at Oklahoma. That may sound like a hot take to some, but go back and watch Dylan Gabriel at UCF. They're not going to have some big drop-off offensively at Oklahoma. I think the Sooners are primed to be, it sounds funny with Oklahoma, but be kind of a sleeper team, because I don't think the Big 12 is that good. And I look around the conference and their schedule, and I see maybe one loss at the end of the year and a Big 12 championship.
I'm with you on Oklahoma being pretty good this year, but the same reason that the Big 12 is not very good is why I think USC could make a run. And I'm basing this off of coaching, but more importantly, elite quarterback play. Caleb Williams is that. The unquestioned better player last year at Oklahoma, and follows his coach and the continuity to USC and is ready for the big stage. But I thought that was too easy here for an outside-the-box sleeper. NC State is one to watch. And it's because of their quarterback. You want to talk about best quarterbacks. Devin Leary gets it done. 35 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. They have, the 2 overtime win last year against Clemson, beating them for the first time in 8 or 9 years. They return practically everyone on both sides of the football. They had a top 30 scoring offense and a top 30 scoring defense last year. And they have the elite quarterback play that can spin it. They're coming off a 9-win season. They could have their second 10-win season, I believe, in program history coming up with the expectations that they have. And if you believe that they're a 10-2 team, then they're right in the thick of things with a possession-like game against Clemson, who's already been crowned a college football playoff contender this year. I think we're overlooking the Wolfpack a bit, although they have been given a lot of credit in the last two polls, the coaches poll and the AP poll. People are aware of them, and they shouldn't sneak up on anyone ranked, or what, 14th or wherever they end up right now. But guys, this is a team that I think is better than what we actually believe, because they had, was it UCLA that backed out on the bowl game with them last year as they were traveling west? And
yes,
and they wanted to end on a high note. I think Dave Doran is still ticked off about that if you asked him about it. And he believes that the continuity that they have and the quarterback play that didn't leave, that's back to run it back, I'm intrigued to watch them, because I do think some of the star power and the upperclassmen can carry them. Again, it's a pipe dream-like scenario for them or any of the schools we mentioned, because unfortunately, if you're playing for the championship, it's coming down to Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia.
Yeah, it was question could be maybe better framed, like who could get into the four? Because once you're in the four, you're not going to win.
It's the Holiday Bowl was canceled. UCLA was the opponent for NC State with all of that.
Yeah, question there is like, are we convinced Clemson just gets right back into the swing of things after a really down
year?
We were surprised they came up 10 spots from where they finished last year.
I think
year
that's why you're throwing NC State
spot
in there.
That's why
as their,
it.
Yeah,
that's what
as
I said,
their replacement.
Yeah. Like I think they're returning more proven commodities to their roster, and I think they have a bit of a chip on their shoulder, and they just beat Clemson a year ago in double overtime. It's a great game. But 35 touchdowns to 5 picks over the season. I mean, Hendon Hooker was excellent at Tennessee coming off the bench. Those were his type numbers, where he threw, what, 3 picks total?
Yeah, I mean, it was like 30-3 was the split.
If you protect the football and you have a top 30 scoring defense in college football, that's efficient, and it's consistent play. We could have the conversation about getting into the four, but the stat is one of the six wins the championship
well,
in the preseason AP.
I'm glad that none of us picked USC in this exercise, but listen to USC's schedule.
Yeah, run it down. By the way, they're picked middle of the Pac-12.
I mean, tell me, there's two games, there's one big X factor at the end of the year that I'll get to, but here's their schedule. They open at home against Rice. They go to Stanford, who's been way down. They get Fresno State at home. Fresno State's a good non-Power 5 team, but it's a non-Power 5 team. They go to Corvallis to take on the Beavers of Oregon State. They get Arizona State at home. Terrible.
Arizona teams are awful this year.
And almost every year, recently.
Just awful.
They get Washington State at home, who Washington State should be pretty good, but you get them at home. They go to Utah. That's a big one, October 15th. They go to Arizona, easy win. They get Cal at home, should be a win. They get Colorado at home, easy win.
Yep.
They play at UCLA, rivalry game, not that tough of a UCLA team, unranked. Now, the X factor is they close the season out with Notre Dame, who's a top 5 team to open the season.
But that could be for a playoff spot.
Two new coaches.
Based on the poll.
I mean, I look at that schedule and think two losses is disappointing in year one for Lincoln Riley.
But
I think
in mind,
one loss is a great season. Two losses, you're probably saying
this is where
we could have done better.
Could be in the playoff.
And we'll get into this with Dave Hookstead later. Notre Dame could be playing for a playoff spot against USC right there.
Well, they're going to be favored right now. I haven't looked at all the Vegas lines. I'm guessing they're favored in every game but two, at Utah and Notre Dame at home.
So
and that may be a
that's
coin
effective,
toss.
Like
right now,
hypothetically, that could be for the Irish a chance with a loss or two, depending on how the season plays out, to get in as the fourth team with a win over USC, because you're not playing the conference championship game. Meanwhile, USC, based on the new rules of the Pac-12, they will play the number two, and if they're number one, they will play Utah again. It's not based on divisions. They've done away with
Oregon.
It.
Or Oregon.
So, yeah, so you will face the top two teams, win-loss record and any other algorithm they're coming up with. They will face off for their conference championship game. So you get the best possible opponents, which is perfect.
And
I mean,
that's
a great win for
whoever wins that game.
USC,
it's a great win.
Yeah, but if USC gets Notre Dame and they remain unbeaten going into Oregon or Utah for the game, that is massive. And what a year that would be for Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams if that's the storyline that plays out. There's always
It's funny that they ranked so lowly in the Pac-12 voting. given that schedule, they were picked like third or fourth. The quarterback and the coach.
Yeah, they were picked third or fourth in their division. But that also, I mean, they won four games a year ago. So
yeah,
but like we're saying, you know, Clemson got automatic bounce back after a down year. The record wasn't that bad, I don't suppose.
No, Clemson. I mean, but Clemson had a great defense. I mean, they were losing games, but they're losing 14-6.
And they lost their five-star, and I'm blanking on his name right now, but their five-star interior defensive lineman, who was an absolute wrecking ball early in the year. And the guy still got all conference votes after playing five games, I think. And I'm blanking on his name right now, but he's going to be back. Their defense can be good. And I don't think I'm being overly biased about the quarterback position, but I'm putting a lot of stock in who your quarterback is going into the year.
Well, everybody should.
Yeah.
And
Oklahoma's good.
I don't like Clemson's quarterback. I just don't. And I don't know that there's a big turnaround for him, even though he's a former five-star guy. So I love Dylan Gabriel at Oklahoma. The other teams we're talking about, I mean, obviously Caleb Williams at USC. Those are guys to watch. I'm not putting Clemson as a quarterback situation to watch.
Well, so we haven't discussed this, but it just popped in my head. So of the top six, which team do you think falls further down at the end of the year? I think
who
of the candidates.
Five and six?
I think Notre Dame for me. Notre Dame is my pick, and that's nothing against Marcus Freeman. It's just, I mean, they're opening up against Ohio State. I think the Buckeyes win that by three possessions plus when it's all said and done. And you know, I'm not sold on Clemson, but Notre Dame's schedule to me is, when you look at it, I think they could do the furthest. They could have the furthest drop. A&M is going to be around.
A&M, though,
they're going to hang around that top 10
I'm going to give honorable mention to them. Their defense is going to allow them to hang around, but I'm going back to the quarterback protocol here, and they don't really know who their quarterback even is.
But the key.
They're an honorable mention for me in that top six that could free fall.
I vote by the end of the season. A Clemson-Notre Dame elimination game.
Just play them together?
If they join the ACC,
let's get rid of one of them. Championship.
A&M, the key for A&M is A-Chain. I think he is an outside candidate for Heisman based on his skill level and the fact that he's not going to be splitting carries with Spiller anymore. I think they're giving him the rock as much as possible. And he can – we saw it firsthand, Chad. A-Chain moves the chains.
A&M – oddly enough, is a very Georgia-like system in that you may not need a dominant, high-level quarterback to win and win big at A&M if you continue to recruit defensively the way they're doing at A&M right now. Just like at Georgia, they got Stetson Bennett at quarterback who does exactly what's asked of them, and they won a national championship. Maybe A&M can be the same way. Jimbo Fisher's lone national title at Florida State came with Jameis Winston at quarterback playing a pro-style system where I remember the next year, I think, after the national championship, they lose to Marcus Mariota in Oregon in the playoff, and that was at the time and still is, you get a college quarterback that can run, and you're running with a quarterback. They weren't really doing that with Jameis Winston when they won the national title. They don't appear to want to do that right now offensively under Jimbo Fisher, so... Same thing goes for Georgia. We know it can work.
You know they're
going to
throw the football
players.
when Chargers are getting dropped on their top wide receiver. The same guy who didn't show up because of an arrest at SEC Media Days, quickly, he's back in the mix, no problem.
Yeah, College Station PD, just looked at that. And
it's
said,
time to...
Guys, let's not...
Although Billy Lucci told me, he's like, there's a lack of a detail in this report that... doesn't really add up. So, to be fair, I haven't read through the entire story. I just noticed he's practicing and there's no suspension. So, yeah.
Saul Goodman showed up at the arraignment and got him out of it.
It's going to be a fun season to follow at A&M. Later, we will take a look at Brian Kelly at LSU and give our thoughts on the upcoming season for the Tigers. When we come back, we head back to the NFL. Buccaneers and Saints. We will discuss Tom Brady's Bucks, Jameis Winston's Saints, and preview the rest of the NFC South on Outkick 360. Outkick 360 rolls on. 6th and Peabody, our location, with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine.
Taking a look at each NFL team, our series through each division continues as we finish off the NFC South. We're seeing one team right here in Nashville with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but we start today's preview with the New Orleans Saints, where last year they really had no business being in contention the way they were. They were 9-8. COVID wiped them out in one of these games, and then the week after, the league changed their COVID protocols and screwed them out of some starters who felt fine but tested positive. Sean Payton is gone. Dennis Allen is a head coach again. They suffered a ton of injuries, including Kamara. They played four different quarterbacks last year. Winston is coming off a torn ACL. Andy Dalton's now his backup. They wanted Deshaun Watson. They lost out when the Browns came back over the top with the guaranteed contract. Michael Thomas is back. He's practically missed all of the last 2 years. But the year that he actually finished the full season, he set a new reception mark prior to Cooper Kupp with over 150 receptions on the year through the 16 games that he played. They've added Chris Olave. They added Jarvis Landry. They have Trevor Penning now at tackle, and he's replacing Teron Armstead, which is going to be a big loss for them. But guys, this is a team that overachieved despite injuries. It sounds a lot like the Titans, minus the musical chairs at quarterback. That's the one injury they didn't have to go through here in Nashville. One team went through a record number of players and still somehow had the number one overall seed. The Saints went through four different quarterbacks and ultimately lost out on any playoff chance because the injuries caught up to them, despite I thought was a very good coaching job.
I think there's room to regress, and it starts with Sean Payton to Dennis Allen. I mean, Sean Payton's one of the best there is. He did great work with quarterbacks and offensive scheme. Pete Carmichael's a guy who has been in the background for them for a long, long time. So we'll see what he does in terms of crafting an offense. But he's doing it with Jameis Winston. I'm not a believer there. And I like the offensive weaponry that they added. Olave and Jarvis Landry and a healthy Michael Thomas would be terrific. Kamara could still get suspended for what he did in Las Vegas. That case is... we haven't heard a word about, but it's not closed as far as we know.
No, in fact, it's not even closed. They keep pushing it back.
I think the next key date in that case is late October at some point.
Well, I'm talking personal conduct policy-wise. It's certainly not closed.
And every report I'm seeing is that he's probably not going to get suspended this year. That'll be a six-game suspension they expect next season.
It's crazy.
They need him to play so he can make the Pro Bowl and play in that game, too.
Andres
Pete. You got to up those Pro Bowl ratings. Go on.
Is a weak link on the interior defensive line, and the one thing that is bound to get worse for them, red zone defense last year, 43.5% touchdown rate, which is excellent. That's the kind of number that tends to come back to balance. They're probably going to give up more touchdowns when teams get down inside the 20.
They had a great scoring defense last year. Yeah. I mean, they were top two or top three in that category.
They've had a top four rush defense for the last four seasons. And DeMario Davis, a big part of that, a guy we interviewed at the Super Bowl in Los Angeles. I like this team. Cam Jordan, Marcus Davenport on the edge.
Honey Badger.
The defense is going to be really good again. We just mentioned it was great a year ago. Look, Jameis Winston can be a little bit goofy at times, and his play can be erratic at times. But he's a hell of a lot better than Trevor Siemian and all the guys, and Ian Book. Sorry, Colin, our producer and resident Notre Dame fan. But they're going to have an upgrade at quarterback. Chris Olave is a great pick. Terrific player at receiver from Ohio State. They're going to be upgraded. Jarvis Landry, they're upgrading at wide receiver. Upgrading offensive line with a first-round pick at right tackle. Paul, you mentioned it. The big referendum is going to come with Dennis Allen. And it's also a referendum on Sean Payton. Because if Dennis Allen takes the torch and improves... and the Saints are a playoff team this year. I sound like playoffs. Playoff team. I like the Saints. I think they're right there for, you know, going to battle for a playoff spot this year. And maybe I'm falling in line with the people who are starting to slowly like Jameis Winston a little bit more this past offseason. But I think the Saints have a shot to be pretty good.
See, this is where Winston could either be – this would be a great Twitter poll –
Like, do you think that Winston is more likely the first quarterback benched in favor of his backup, or that he has like comeback player of the year type numbers?
I think it's comeback player of the year.
Well, if that's,
I would lean more to that side than that's getting
the case,
benched.
If that's the case, then Trevor Penning ends up being the best draft pick that any team made in the first round. And all he's been known for so far is getting into fights. Now, so because they need to solidify their offensive line, right? With
for
Teron
sure.
Armstead out,
hurts.
He's now in Miami. Penning in just one preseason game, but we're basing all this off of numbers and actual live play. They wanted to get him some work. He had 26 passing downs. Penning did in his first preseason game, and he gave up a sack, a quarterback hit, three pressures, and had a penalty. So,
terrific.
Welcome to the NFL. Yeah. To the guy,
no fights.
He was not ejected. But the Saints are intriguing because Dennis Allen's there. The only thing that I have reservations on, if they're so good, Sean Payton doesn't leave. Sean Payton got out before they started to really look bad
and deal with the salary cap.
That's my feeling of it. Is they kept kicking the can down the road. With the cap and everything else, you had Kamara, and who knows what's going to happen this offseason with him. And again, like I just, Michael Thomas was in limbo. He's missed the last 2 years. It just felt like a good time to go do media for a year. And if it's that good, it's why Arians leaving is so strange. There's something going on there because you don't, if you're a coach in this league, you don't leave if you have a chance to win. It just doesn't happen.
Saints are my barometer on the NFC and the quality of the NFC, which we know is not as good as the AFC with the plethora of good young quarterbacks in the AFC. If the Saints are in the playoff race, which they could well be, I think it's a testament to the NFC not being that good. If they're in it for the sixth spot, particularly not squeezing in at the seventh spot, which we know could be a weak team in either conference, if they're in it for the sixth spot, I say the NFC is not very good. And if they aren't, then maybe there are better teams around and the Saints fall where I think they should be.
Let's tier it like we have the other divisions. Bucks, who we're going to talk about.
Clear
but
cut.
In the middle, we talked Panthers yesterday. We've talked Saints. I think it's pretty clear cut. Falcons are in need of a high draft pick next year. They're fourth. How close is it between Saints and Panthers in the middle of that division?
I don't think it's close. I think the Saints are second best team.
Yes, I do too.
Right. Then I think that's the case.
Sure.
They're going to be contending for a playoff spot.
I think Atlanta, Carolina could be a contest for third.
Tampa Bay, you guys know it's our pick for the NFC South with Tom Brady returning, even though he's not there right now. He's going into his 23rd season. He's 45 years old. It feels like his last year, but we should say that. Do they have what it takes to get back to the Super Bowl? I think you see the key additions. Todd Bowles is now the head coach. I found it interesting just observing Bruce Arians today. He's in Nashville with the team, and he stands right behind the ball, 20 yards behind the ball. But it's not like he's behind the team and just observing like a general manager. He's like Jim Schwartz for the Titans, where he's on the field and he's talking to people and he's, giving observations. But Todd Bowles is running the show. Byron Leftwich is definitely running the show on offense. And Tom Brady is running the show. Russell Gage is coming in from Atlanta. They have Shaq Mason on the offensive line. Akeem Hicks he had a really good practice today. He's 6'4", 6'5", 350 pounds, I think. Paul, you got the roster right there, but I mean, he's massive, and I believe he's coming from Chicago, and that was that's quite the addition to their defensive line because they have trimmed some of the exterior veteran guys. Like Jason Pierre-Paul is not playing for the Bucs this year, but they have young guys. They drafted Tryon a year ago. They added another defensive lineman this year. Logan Hall was one of their picks. Vita Vea is still there.
Stud.
Devin White is in a contract year at linebacker. I like players in contract years. Gronk is retired. They added Kyle Rudolph. It's an interesting mix. What they have to me, guys, to get back to where they were is a run game. Fournette's got to stay healthy. I don't know if he's their lead back, but he's got to be a difference maker on some key downs for them. They have Giovanni Bernard, Keyshawn Vaughn. I was talking to someone from Tampa today. Keyshawn Vaughn may not make the roster based on how the practice is going so far. Like, it's a weird vibe in the backfield. They've got to figure out the run game because Brady threw more passes than any quarterback last year. That has to tamp down a bit to have more success. They've got to grind games and actually have some time of possession instead of just relying on Brady to do everything.
I agree about the run game, though. They're satisfied when they can't run it to take short passes as their run game. One of those teams that's able to do that. Here's one thing. I think they need to fatten up on the division, right? They need to go 5-1 in the division. They have some trouble with the Saints. You get a split there, beat up Carolina and Atlanta. Should be fine. Here's one thing. They faced the easy slate of quarterbacks last year. This year, and their divisional quarterbacks are bad, right? Carolina didn't have anybody. Atlanta didn't have anybody. The Saints, I'm not a Jameis Winston guy. You're not scared of him game planning. But outside the division, Prescott, Rodgers, Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Matthew Stafford, Joe Burrow. That's a hell of a six-pack right there. All six, you have to look at those and say, those guys can stand toe-to-toe with Tom Brady in terms of a quarterback matchup. So you're not getting the automatic check mark in the quarterback column when you're reading the matchup thing. So the defense has to be ready to defend some better quarterbacks than they beat last year.
I'm curious where Byron Leftwich is left after all this. If this is, in fact, Brady's last year, you know, he turned down the opportunity to go to Jacksonville, and I don't blame him. Has a chance to win a Super Bowl again as a Bucs offensive coordinator.
He interviewed in New Orleans, too.
Yeah. I just wonder how he's going to be viewed, you know, with being Brady's offensive coordinator, and then what's going to happen with Tampa this year. Paul, we did the draft last week of coaches that could be fired midseason. I had Todd Bowles on the list of guys because if you go from Arians to Bowles and it's bad quickly or they fall off, I mean, that's a chance that it happens after 1 year. Would Leftwich be considered if the offense continues to perform at a high level? I'm just really curious about his future. I mean, look, the Bucs it's Tom Brady's the engine, and they're going to be fine this year. I think Rudolph coming in at tight end, veteran guy, not going to be Gronk from a safety net perspective for Brady and that relationship, but what can he be for the offense? Losing Ronald Jones at running back, what's that going to look like now with that rotation that they have? There's question marks there, but the ultimate question mark is always going to be quarterback, and that's an emphatic yes when it's Tom Brady, even at 45
years
old.
Here's one other thing about them that really touches Brady. Last year, they were one of the top teams in the league with offensive line continuity. 88% of the snaps, their top five offensive linemen played together. This year, that number is going to be 0% of the snaps. Because Ryan Jensen got hurt, the fourth day of camp or whatever it was.
And that's the, yes.
And so 0% continuity on the offensive line is not Tom Brady's way.
Here's what Jensen meant to him. Brady, whenever he decided to come back, called Ryan Jensen, who was a free agent, and said, hey, what do you need me to do to get this done? I'll get it done. I'll make some calls and get your deal. What do you need? And within 24 hours, he signed. He wanted Jensen back, and then I believe it was Aaron Stinney, former Tennessee Titans offensive lineman, blocked a defensive lineman into Ryan Jensen. And I don't think Stinney has been the full-time starter since in practice reps.
Got like a depth chart here somewhere.
They benched him, or they're at least rotating his position after that practice. Here, did you see him immediately?
He's listed as a starter.
Yeah, but they
these are paper.
Sure, they're unofficial. And he was working with the starters, I think as punishment. I mean,
you're not happy with that.
They put him with Gabbert,
or Trask.
Yeah, or Trask. One other note on Tampa. How quickly I was thinking about this last night. How quickly I forgot how last season ended because they win the Super Bowl, and last year they're put out by the Rams. But keep in mind, the Rams were up 27-3, and Tom Brady brought them back almost to tie the game. And in a two-minute drill, Matthew Stafford stepped up, as Dockets would say, he sacked up and delivered a dart over the middle and a busted coverage to Cooper Kupp that set up a game-winning field goal as time expired. That's how they lost. They came back down. They were down 24 points
It was a conversation like the Super Bowl, the yes. Falcon Super Bowl.
And had every, I mean, everything was like, Brady's doing it again. So I don't put it past him one bit to do it again. As crazy as it sounds and it looks on paper and how daunting that it looks, and as the quarterback battles that he'll have, I mean, you can't knock the guy out. The only way you can get him off the field is to offer him a vacation in week three of training camp.
And listen, Rams, Packers scare you in the NFC if you're the Bucs. Who else? Cowboys? No.
Well,
you know, you're not shaking in your boots at the three games you're going to have to win.
Right. There are a couple of teams that are to be determined.
For sure.
But yeah, there's nothing.
It's not a gauntlet.
No, it's not the AFC by any means.
It's nothing that Tom Brady can't handle, even with 10 days off during the middle of training camp. Still going to be fine.
10 days off.
Tom Terrific will be just fine.
We should have honored him and taken the same 10 days.
Everybody takes it's like a siesta.
A Brady-cation.
If you're in Spain, if you cover the NFL, you now just take 10 days off in the middle of training camp.
Everyone goes dark.
You know, if it's good enough for Tom Brady, then me, the beat writer for the Buffalo Times, certainly could take 10 days off in the middle of training camp. For the same, right?
Day one. Journal. Day one.
You know what would be epic?
Sand
epic
feels great on my job. Toes.
And Brady has a sense of humor like this. If he tweeted out, well, on the day he's returning, if he tweeted out a photo from Stephen Ross's yacht from back in December and said, vacation's over, I'm back.
That would be funny.
And he has a great he thinks like that too.
The Michigan men are
terrific finished. 10 days on the high seas.
The Michigan meeting is over.
Which
is
a picture of but you could even it's from a distance, but you can see if you zoom in, like the Dolphins flag, the logo on top of the yacht.
Michigan flag and a Dolphin flag.
Be amazing.
Or, you know, you sent out a video that you were out recruiting Gronk out of retirement.
Do you think that Goodell would discipline Tom Brady for making a joke like that?
The NFL needs Brady.
Or would
Brady.
They even talk to him?
Look how many national games they put him on.
Oh, I asked the question because it's Brady.
Oh, I know.
If it was anyone else, they would, we would have Adam Schefter receive word from a source that the NFL has got real hard line on this activity on social media.
Commissioner called.
And they're not happy about it.
They're so ticked off, they're going to suspend Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. You know?
Be someone else other than Brady.
You know, we're so mad at Tom Brady that Alvin Kamara just got 12 games instead of six.
We're so mad at Tom for doing this. We're going to go for a full year on Deshaun Watson after a year of not doing anything.
Get Calvin Ridley back in here. How many games did he bet on? That's two seasons now,
indefinite
Calvin.
Plus one.
That's going to be, oh, you want a third? Yeah, that's three seasons you're out. Just go ahead and retire.
Coming up, a note on the Patriots offense and observations from the preseason game and what Belichick's saying. And we'll get into LSU. If you're betting enough money to make you nervous, there's an over-under in Vegas that I think is very intriguing, and I'm not sure which way the majority of the public would go on it. That's all coming up on Outkick 360. Outkick 360 rolls on across the Outkick network. Talk LSU football. Dave Hookstead from Outkick.com will join us. Talk Big Ten football coming up in hour number three. Paul, biggest observation today watching Titans and Bucks would be what?
Well, the Treylon Burks thing is probably the biggest that he left injured, but I'm going to differentiate the top two corners. Christian Fulton, good. Caleb Farley, bad. And I think that's disappointing. Caleb Farley was very good yesterday. He had back-to-back breakups of passes to Racy McMath, arriving right on time and playing big and physical. And then today, against some smaller receivers in particular, slow reacting, slow breaking, not arriving on time, then getting back into the play and getting juked again, looked really disjointed and out of it. Meanwhile, Christian Fulton looked like, you know, he picked up where he left off, and he is clearly the number one guy for them, and they don't have to worry about that spot.
Patriots preseason game, a quick note here. Some of you may know this, others may not. I find it intriguing because it's something to follow in the preseason with Mac Jones. So New England, what they did is they had Matt Patricia call plays for Brian Hoyer, and they had Joe Judge call plays for rookie Bailey Zappe from Western Kentucky. That was their model for how they approached offensive coordinator without having one. They did not show any new concepts that we discussed last week, where they're doing all these new outside zone reads when they're more like heavy hitters between the tackles with their running backs. Nothing of that sort in the first preseason game, which I found intriguing because they're definitely practicing that. That is something that the best writers that cover that team are pointing out. From Mike Reese on down, they're pointing out the changes and adjustments that they're noticing at practice. So I found it intriguing that Belichick's saying, look, it's not like we're he did acknowledge he doesn't think not naming a coordinator is any type of competitive advantage. He said he doesn't view it as a competition competition type decision as to why he's not telling anyone who's doing
it. The personal play callers is fascinating. It's something different. I don't recall ever hearing that in an NFL situation. But you said one for Hoyer, one for Zappe. None of that matters because the guy's Mac Jones. So who's calling the plays for Mac
Jones?
Well,
in practice, it's been Patricia.
It's interesting in a two-quarterback system. Yeah. If you pull that off, it's like having a backup catcher who catches one pitcher in the rotation every 5 days. That pitcher performs better with that catcher, and then they call pitches with them. Same thing goes for the quarterback and the play caller for the quarterback that's in the game. Hey. It's an interesting concept, but I mean, I'm not Bill Belichick, but not a lick of this makes any sense to me. I don't know what he's trying to accomplish here.
Yeah, and the other theory was, you know, he was asked last week, what are your thoughts on scrapping something that's been a disaster? I'm paraphrasing that question.
This question got results.
And he said, if we're not just going to run into a brick wall, if something's not working,
if it's not productive,
I'm changing it. Like, there's no reason to continue doing something that's not working. And so the other theory was they've come to the realization that whatever they're trying to do in the run game is not working.
The change.
And that they changed it based on just going back to the basics of what they're doing. But still, that it's way too much to read into to one preseason game where Mac Jones is, you know, you're not calling plays for him and you're watching number twos and number threes go at it. And in large part, a lot of newcomers, for that matter. So I don't know if I buy that yet, but it's been bad enough to where people were actually thinking maybe that's what they're doing. They're fighting a lot in the joint practice with
Carolina.
And the reason for that stems back to the regular season game where Brian Burns picked up a fumble or intercepted a pass last year, and Mac Jones grabbed him and tried to twist his ankle as he tried to tackle him, but he didn't have the football. And Mac Jones said after the game he thought he had the football. And Hassan Reddick, a teammate at the time, said that was a dirty play and brought all this up. Well, that has started like this firestorm trash talk fest at this joint practice.
With Jones at the heart of it.
Months later, and Mac Jones was funny about it. He was asked about, you know, are you and Brian cool? He's like, oh yeah, we made up at the Pro Bowl. Like everything's good. Like no hard feelings. He doubled down on the fact he thought he had the football, but still, we remember the play. He twists his ankle and people, you know, there was an uproar over it. Not saying the media, I'm saying in the game.
Yep.
And that has carried over to a lot of fights yesterday and today.
And allegedly,
one that injured an ankle of a fan. Today.
And he said something to, he said something to Burns yesterday on the field that started one of these fights that I can't imagine a reporter repeated. You read it on Twitter, Chad.
I waited.
It seemed
for
like it.
It
was a fan account, probably.
Yeah. Well, it was someone who had like 2,000 followers, I want to say.
Yeah.
Maybe around that
so
number.
So we're seeing that confirmed by anybody?
I waited for
like
it
a
last
retweet
night.
By a reporter?
No, it's a joke.
Oh, okay.
It's a fake account.
I waited for it last night from Mike Reese. He was doing a hit on SportsCenter. He's recapping the day. I'm like, if it happened,
he'll say
Mike's going
something
to mention
about
it.
It'd be great if Mike actually read the tweet that we read.
Yeah.
He had to clean it up a little bit. But Mac Jones was quoted as saying, quote, unquote.
Mike's the greatest.
By the way, I've got a crazy Twitter beef going on right now with someone listening to our show that's I'll just have to tell you guys about it when we come back.
Oh, okay, we'll do that. LSU. Maybe he's beefing with our over-under here. 7.5 wins. We discussed the Tigers and Brian Kelly's first year next on OutKick 360.